Today we're going to be talking about the standard edition of the complete psychological works of Sigmund Freud, Volume 7, A Case History, 3 Essays on Sexuality, and other works. But today I'm only going to be talking about a few different quotes that I pulled from this volume, instead of talking about the whole book like I have been in some of my prior episodes. Quote 1, page 47. Anyone who takes up psychoanalytic work will quickly discover that a symptom has more than one meaning and serves to represent several unconscious mental processes simultaneously. And I should like to add that in my estimation, a single unconscious mental process or fantasy will scarcely ever suffice for the production of a symptom. Okay, so I'm going to separate this quote into two parts. The first part, anyone who takes up psychoanalytic work will quickly discover that a symptom has more than one meaning and serves to represent several unconscious mental processes simultaneously. This reminded me of a quote that I remember reading in Dr. Nancy McWilliams' book, Psychoanalytic Psychotherapy, A Practitioner's Guide. I'm going to read that now. Thus, a woman who becomes anorectic may have developed that problem because of the interaction of the following contributants. 1. A background of parental overinvestment in her eating. 2. A history of sexual abuse. 3. A recent loss or disappointment. 4. A developmental challenge of which she is afraid. 5. An unconscious association of weight gain with pregnancy. 6. A history of having been shamed about her hunger or need for emotional nourishment. 7. A sense of having been neglected in her family. 8. An experience of having been admired for having lost weight. And 9. The repeated exposure to highly valued but unrealistic images of women's bodies. Her anorexia may unconsciously accomplish the following goals for her. 1. To achieve control over herself and others despite the efforts of others to control her. 2. To reduce her attractiveness to possible molesters. 3. To express grief. 4. To maintain a sense of being pre-pubertal, non-menstruating, and non-adult. 5. To reassure herself she is not pregnant. 6. To avoid criticism for self-indulgence. 7. To get attention from her family. 8. To garner compliments, and 9. To conform to cultural expectations of beauty. Most analysts would say that is a short list for something as complex as anorexia, which may reflect many other influences and fulfill many other functions as well. For example, there now seem to be subcultures, such as modeling and dance, in which anorectic behavior is normative and assiduously reinforced. So I think that's a great example of what Freud is trying to say here when he says that a symptom has more than one meaning. Dr. Nancy McWilliams listed 9 different meanings that this anorectic behavioral symptom might have. And Freud says that it serves to represent several unconscious mental processes simultaneously. And Dr. Nancy McWilliams listed 9 different ways that her anorectic behavior might be serving her and aiding her, actually. And so I think that that's a good point worth taking into consideration. It's not always easy to change our behaviors, and it's not just about motivation and commitment. There's all of these underlying things that are going on that we might not be aware of that are keeping us where we are. Dr. Nancy McWilliams also writes, psychologists and medical researchers conducting conventional empirical investigations operate according to the principle of parsimony. And for research purposes, parsimony is a highly useful assumption, but it is not necessarily the truth. Both Occam's razor, which is based on the principle of simplicity, and Lanyi's balloon, which he talked about being based on the principle of complexity, are fictions, ways of asserting a preference for either simplified or elaborated theories of causation. The tendency of psychoanalytic therapists to prefer complex, intricate explanations over simple ones may express both their clinical experience and the temperament that incline them toward doing an in-depth, emotionally complicated kind of work in the first place. Certainly, we may eventually learn that some psychological phenomena have single causes, but in the meantime, the psychoanalytic prejudice is to assume complexity. Number 2, page 77 and 78. There is a great deal of symbolism of this kind in life, but as a rule we pass it by without heeding it. When I set myself the task of bringing to light what human beings keep hidden within them, not by the compelling power of hypnosis, but by observing what they say and what they show, I thought the task was a harder one than it really is. He that has eyes to see and ears to hear may convince himself that no mortal can keep a secret. If his lips are silent, he chatters with his fingertips. Betrayal oozes out of him at every pore, and thus the task of making conscious the most hidden recesses of the mind is one which it is quite possible to accomplish. So I think Freud can go a little bit overboard in this area sometimes, but I do like the principle of it, and it's fun to think about. He calls it symptomatic acts. It's when maybe you have an unconscious desire to show something, but consciously, perhaps you're guarded and you don't want it to come across. He says, we cannot lie. We are going to show that in some way, shape, or form, whether it's the slip of a tongue, whether it's knocking over a clock like Jay Gatsby and The Great Gatsby, whether it's a button left undone. There's always something that we're going to be showing that if someone properly attunes and pays attention, they might be able to surmise what is going on underneath. Number 3, page 189. Psychoanalytic investigation enables us to make what has been forgotten conscious and thus do away with a compulsion that arises from the unconscious psychical material. This quote reminded me of a quote that I saw attributed to Jung that said, "Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate." Now, I don't know if that's something that he actually said. I didn't find that anywhere, but somebody else did point out that he did say, "The psychological rule says that when an inner situation is not made conscious, it happens outside as fate." Pretty close. Example of this is, imagine somebody who's constantly unlucky in relationships. They've decided that it just must be fate. I'm unlucky in love, and I'll always be alone.
God, this hurts so bad. My heart's on fire.
Maybe that's on the surface, but perhaps sometime during childhood, they formed the now unconscious belief that they're unworthy of love. Perhaps they formed that because they were neglected by their parents, the way that their parents treated them. They surmised they were unworthy of love. And now as they've gotten older and they're an adult, that belief is outside of their awareness. They don't even remember forming that belief. But if they really do deep down believe they're unworthy of love, that unconscious belief is going to drive their behavior. Every time they start to feel close to somebody, it's going to feel uncomfortable and maybe they're going to run in the other direction. So what Freud is saying is that when we can make the forgotten, that forgotten belief, that when we can make that conscious, it does away with the compulsion that arises from the unconscious psychical material. Number 4, page 259. There are many ways and means of practicing psychotherapy. All that lead to recovery are good. So I don't know if Dr. Nancy McWilliams had just read this book or also really likes these quotes when she wrote the book Psychoanalytic Psychotherapy. But what it made me think of was a quote that she has in here on page 25, where she says, "The question of which approach to therapy is globally superior seems to me as misdirected as the question of whether classical, jazz, rock, folk, or country music does a better job of nourishing the soul." To further buttress my point, look at what she wrote on page 219. Someone was reading volume 7. No, but I like that quote, and I think it's a good point. And I think it's pretty cool that Freud said that all the way back when, and I think it's pretty neat that Dr. Nancy McWilliams echoed that. I think sometimes we can have our own biases on which therapy is best and which therapy is superior, but it all comes down to what therapy speaks the most to this particular person. It would be like saying jazz is the gold standard of music, or which, you know, there is an argument for that. Or rock music is the most empirically supported music that speaks to the soul. It's just a reminder to stay flexible, be open, don't get caught up in your own theories and ways of practicing. Do what is good for this person. So this is it for today. Let me know what you think. If you have any other examples from literature, Greek mythology, novels, the Bible, whatever it might be, of someone who acted out an unconscious belief or thought and thought that it was fate that was playing out, and then came to come some kind of insight and realize that they were contributing to their own misfortune, let me know, because I would really like to hear your thoughts on that. I would like to hear more examples. All right, as always, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I hope that this video was entertaining, interesting, that you got something from it. And maybe it even encouraged you to read a little bit of Freud.